Eve, the day before Election Day. We're talking about your voting rights ahead of tomorrow. If you've not done early voting, if you plan on doing the traditional voting on Tuesday, then you need to listen up. You need to make sure that you have all of the information that you need when you go to the polls. And my guests are here to share that with you. Marsha Johnson Blanco, she is co-director of the Voting Rights Project for the Lawyers Committee on Civil Rights Under Law. Dr. Lorenzo Morris, political science professor at Howard University. And Edward Hales, managing director and general counsel of the Advancement Project here in Washington, D.C. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jalea, calling from Camp Springs. Jalea, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. I wanted to give a shout-out to Steve Harvey for having the young lady who's a Black Republican, Sheryl Underwood, who says she's clearly not voting for Trump. She made a joke about Barbara Bush jumping off the oatmeal box just to stop Trump. I thought that was very funny of her. A little mean-spirited, but funny. So I thought they were still in the comedy routine when she said Hillary was coming on. So my surprise, Hillary was really on the Steve Harvey show this morning. And one thing she said was that the lines will be very long, so don't give up. So I just wanted to say, advocate to us with the bad knees, bad ankles, bad legs, whether it's us or our grandparents, bring a folding chair. So basically, that's all I wanted to say. Don't give up. Don't walk away.
Okay.
Vote.
Good. Jalea, thank you so much for your input. Lonnie, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Lonnie. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. Harold. Good afternoon to your panel as well.
Hey, how are you?
All right, Mr. Harold. You know, my thing is this. I mean, I understand about the voter suppression. I really, honestly, God, I do. But my question to Mr. Harold is to you and to the panel. Could it be as from both the Democrat and the Republican side? Because I'm a registered independent. And, you know, and people are telling me, well, like, hey, I'm like, well, look, you know, I don't know who I'm going to vote for yet, but on tomorrow I'm going to vote for somebody. And I'm telling people, I'm like, you know, Hillary to me is just as bad as Trump. So, The voter the suppression, I went somewhere the other day, and I was talking to the people. I was like, yeah, I'm a registered independent. They were like, you should vote for Hillary because you're Black. And I'm going, huh? That's not educated. Because why should I vote for somebody because of Black? So what I'm trying to say to you and your panel is that the voter suppression is from both ends. It's from both ends of the spectrum. So it can't just be Trump. It's, when they told me that, I'm like, so I should vote for Hillary because of the color of my skin. I can vote for who I think is going to be best for the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, and it kind of bothered me. So, you know, I mean, I'm looking at you. I'm asking your panel to, you know, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe they can help me. Maybe you can help me. But I think it should be from both ends.
Well, Lonnie, hold on. Let me have my panel react, because certainly, you know, voter suppression or voter intimidation is not the sole domain of one particular party or one particular philosophy or the like. Dirty tricks are open for everyone. I'm quite sure. Professor Morris, I'll let you react first.
I disagree with that.
Oh, you don't think so?
It isn't that Democrats wouldn't like to on some occasions, perhaps, but on the national level, there is no instance in which higher voting does not benefit the Democrats.
Okay.
Simply because the people who don't vote tend to be disproportionately minority and low income. So that generally, without any other details in polls, the more people that vote, the more the Democrats are likely to win. In fact, given the actual registration party size, if everybody voted in both parties at the same level, we wouldn't have had a Republican president since the end of World War II. So turnout is beneficial. Now, there may be people predisposed to deception and a variety of things that go along with it. So at local levels.
And that's what I think I was saying.
Yeah, I know.
Because certainly,
I got you, you can't say that.
Yeah.
Okay. On local levels, you have machine politics in the cities that have been corrupt. But the nature of that corruption has been much less ideological and much more personal over the long run and much more materialistic. So that when you worry about the kind of manipulation that has to do with disenfranchising whole masses of people on the basis of beliefs or interests, then that has been the province of the minority party, which in this case has always been, on the national level, the Republican Party.
So what do you tell Lonnie as a registered independent about the kinds of conversations that he has had?
Can I just say to vote your interest, and those interests have often gone with people who want to protect the Voting Rights Act, for example, or gone with people who don't want to deport everybody who doesn't fit a certain description. So most of the people who are voting in one party or the other, whether even if they're black, have chosen the person or persons for other reasons, even if it looks like they're voting for somebody simply because they are Republican. We know from our surveys, the one that Howard just did, that there are a lot of issues that go into the choices that black voters make. And if you look carefully at black candidates other than the presidential level, you'll find a lot that blacks have voted for against. And so people forget that. No one votes at whatever they say purely on a racial dimension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would add that it's really important to pay attention not just to the presidential race, but all the races on the ticket, because there's a lot of attention and paid now to the presidential, the top of the ticket. But you're not just voting for president. You should pay attention to all the issues and that are, you know, the charter amendments and all that that's on the ballot. Election protection, to which the Lawyers Committee and Advancement Project belong, we're nonpartisan, so we're not here to talk about who you should vote for, but to ensure that your voting rights are protected and you can cast a ballot that counts. But I would just say, pay attention to the entire ballot and not just focus on the top of the ticket. And again, focus on the issues, as Dr. Morris said.
Okay. Lonnie, thank you so much for your phone call, and good luck tomorrow, no matter who or what issue you decide to vote for. I want to talk a little bit about something that I mentioned before the break, and something that I don't think a lot of people have actually heard of. But there are a handful of states in the U.S. where after you vote, you can actually go back and change your vote. Talk to me about that, Mr. Hale.
Yeah, there's about 8 states that allow voters to change their vote after they, for example, requested an absentee ballot, cast the absentee ballot, and then decided, you know what, I need to change it. And if they come to their precinct, and I'm thinking about Wisconsin in particular, Minnesota, Michigan, Pennsylvania, they can have that vote canceled and vote in another way. It's rare that it happens. I don't think it's ever determined the outcome of an election. Think, for example, of a person who, and this has happened actually, Senator Wellstone was on the ballot, and people cast absentee ballots for him, and he was killed in a plane accident before Election Day. And so a number of persons, it was too late to add someone else of his party on the ballot, so persons were sort of had this compelling need to do something differently. So state laws are the determinative of whether you can change your ballot. In Wisconsin, it's up to 3 times. In most places, you can't do that.
3 times?
3 times, which is confusing.
Wisconsin may be the only state in which you can change an in-person ballot. Most of others are for absentee ballots or mail. Yeah. Absentee ballots.
Okay, so
I'm sorry, I would just add that if you're voting and you make a mistake before you cast the ballot, then you can go to the poll worker and say, I've spoiled my ballot, I'd like another ballot. But this is before you cast the ballot. So on Election Day, if you made a mistake, you can get a new ballot as well.
And certainly we've seen that in many states where you believe if you've made a mistake, particularly not only with, handwritten ballots or e-ballots, but I'm just fascinated by the possibilities.
It comes up as an ideological issue.
Sure.
It was raised in this election after the FBI first announcement to project the image that it was such an important announcement that people would want to change their vote. It wasn't necessarily that anybody could have reasonably expected that anything would happen, but to project the image that we were in a desperate situation and any reasonable person would see this announcement as so important that they would want to consider changing their vote.
Yeah, I've been involved in voting rights for a couple of decades now, and I had really never heard about it until last week, and it was Fox News Network that kept promoting this idea that in key battleground states, you could change your ballot after the email disclosure came out.
I guess the thing that makes me uncomfortable about such a thing is, particularly as it relates to electronic balloting, that if I, and help me with this, because I would imagine that every state is different. If I voted in Wisconsin during early voting 2 weeks ago or a week or so ago, and then I want to go back and change my vote tomorrow, how do I know that my Clinton vote last week is not a second Clinton vote tomorrow? Or how do I know that my Clinton vote last week is not canceled when I vote for Trump tomorrow?
One of the, I don't know the rules.
But let me just say
that one of the reasons that most states has absentee ballots, because at least by the envelopes you can trace the presence of a vote. Presumably it occurs before November, all of them occur before November 7th, so that they can then not include or count the ballot that you have mailed in. For the in-person states, I don't know, but I do know that they have to be able to trace the vote. So that it could only happen, it would take an amazing amount of agility on both the election people and the voter to be able to do that. So anybody planning to do it really would not have any significant impact. It is the advertising, it is the claim, the projection of a sense of hysteria about who I voted for that is really at issue here. People marketing it.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Roy, calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for calling, Roy. What's on your mind?
Hey, Howard. Yeah, I'm listening to your guests, and you all are talking about poll watchers and poll monitors, and it sounds intimidating. And I actually voted earlier in Prince George's County in the Fort Washington area, and I went inside the place. It was like all these church ladies in there, so friendly.
You got to watch those church ladies, though. You know, they can be pretty sharp. But go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, what are all these friendly ladies that was in there assisting me? You know, they did verify my information, but are they were those poll monitors or poll watchers? I mean, they were really cordial and nice.
The election officials.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I could speak because my mom is one of those church ladies who help at polling places during early voting. So those are poll workers. Those are regular citizens who have signed up to work at the polling places and help people to be able to vote. So they would have just been poll workers checking you in so that you can get your information and vote.
Oh, okay. All right.
Part of the good history when the polling places were frequent enough so that you would see somebody you knew. Mm-hmm. And I always liked to vote on election day just to see, the older woman usually who lived down the street or my neighbor would say hi. And it was just, if you didn't know them, you knew other people in line. And that was the way it was supposed to be.
But there are also poll officials too. Who are those poll officials? The poll judges, are they different from the poll workers?
No, they're often the same. Now the poll watchers are people who are designated often in states by the parties to oversee the balloting. So they're there to watch the work of the poll workers to make sure that nothing wrong is happening.
And you usually have people from both parties,
exactly.
Both major parties.
That's exactly right.
And states allow that, and some places allow foreign observers, too.
Mm-hmm. Depending on how many parties may be active, is that correct?
Well, I don't know. All parties, I think, that are recognized have a right to have a representative in most states, if not all. But in addition, we have things you don't think about. We have foreigners, just like our Americans go abroad. We have a very small number, but sometimes an important symbolic number of people observing the election to show that it's a democratic process.
Yeah, and they are here this year from the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe, and they're going to be around the country observing our elections as well, just like when we go abroad to observe others.
I need to take a break. And Roy, thank you so much for giving us a call. Good luck to you if you are voting tomorrow. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Coming up, we want to talk a little bit about shenanigans, because there are always shenanigans as it relates to election year, election day, what you should not do tomorrow if you go to vote. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about knowing your voting rights ahead of tomorrow's election day. Let me go back to the phone lines. Denise, calling from Laurel. Thanks for calling, Denise. What's on your mind?
Well, I attempted to register online for the state of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And the notification that it gave was I could check back, you know, and online to see if it had registered me completely. Of course, I never saw that completely registered. So my question is, since I am shown as a registered voter in the state of Ohio, but I live in Maryland now, is that something I can take care of in the date of voting?
Yeah, so what I would suggest doing is call the 866 Our Vote hotline. Our volunteers there can look up your information and verify that your registration in Maryland did go through.
Oh, okay. All right. I just figured it was probably bombarded with a lot of online registration, didn't get back to me, but thank you.
And what are the hours for the hotline too? Because I would imagine if not now, they're going to be in full gear, full effect tomorrow.
Oh yes, the hotline is going to open at 5:30 tomorrow morning,
mm-hmm.
and it will go until 9:30 Eastern. On the West Coast, we would go until 11:30 Eastern. So it's going to be open during voting hours across the country tomorrow.
Okay, and that is 866 Our Vote. So Denise, good luck to you. Let's talk a little bit about some of the only way that you can really describe it is chaos and foolishness and dirty tricks that we have seen. We've seen everything from text your vote to voting online to all of these other kinds of issues. Mr. Hales, how do you know what's what, and how do you know what's real?
Yep. Well, you're right. There are these deceptive practices we see in each election cycle, and they get more creative each time. We've seen folks say Democrats vote on Wednesday and Republicans on Tuesday. Ignore what you are hearing except from legitimate sources. That's one reason the Election Protection Coalition was built, to provide useful, community-friendly, accurate information about what actually are your rights and what actually is direct information about your voting experience that day. So there's great materials for folks to, if they have questions, call the 1-866
our vote
number. And if you have any questions, report. That's the other very important fact. We need to document and report incidents of deception so that we can make sure that whether it's lawyers and other advocates on the ground, if it's Department of Justice officials, if it's election officials, can stop it right away and get radio stations to broadcast to the communities to look out for each dirty trick that's reported.
What kinds of things have any of you heard about? Because some of them I would describe as downright silly and really unbelievable. But I must admit that text your vote 2016, everybody's on cell phones, smartphones, as deceptive and as completely wrong as it is, it's also convincing. Mm-hmm.
Right. And those type of deceptive practices speak to what we normally do in our everyday lives and the use of our phones in our life. So confirming you cannot vote by text, you cannot vote on social media, you cannot vote online. So if you see any of that information, do not believe it. And if you have any questions, as we've been mentioning, call the hotline, or there's also the 866rvote.org website there, and there's information there online that can provide the right information for you.
How realistic are the fears of a cyber attack? Again, information like that, very, very high in the news cycle, when you're talking about whether you're talking about, the Russians, whether you're talking about some kid in a garage with, you know, a brand new computer hacking into stuff. We've heard, and I've seen this on social media. I remember seeing a lot of this back in 2012, even, of people going into a booth and pressing a button, and the candidate that you picked is not the one that, that lights up. Is this a real fear? Of cyber attacks?
Well, you're looking at me. I think, of course, it's a real fear.
I mean, a real
the
fear, but is
within,
it
within the range of having a national effect for
yes,
such a cyber
right.
attack to occur and to go unnoticed. That doesn't mean that you will necessarily stop it, but to go unnoticed on a significant level across a significant number of states is unlikely. But more importantly, with all fears that have some grounding, however remote, we have to face them. And there's nothing you can do about the fear except vote.
Yeah.
And the easiest way to do that is to rely on your parents. But if starting tomorrow, you walk into a place, wheel into a place, and cast your ballot, that is the safest way to be sure. And nobody else can tell you that's wrong. And if anybody tries to stop you, there is almost no reason they can stop you from casting the ballot.
You mentioned.
What I would add is that our elections are very decentralized. Each state
yeah.
is responsible for their own elections administration. So in order to affect a national outcome, you'll have to look at the systems in each state to hack. And the systems are offline, so it's not internet-based systems that you can get into to hack. So I just want to reassure people that it's a decentralized system, and that decentralization offers protections against hacking.
And if I could just add, too, we've been talking to our teams that are out in different states about this. And again, preparation is key. They've been meeting with election officials. Folks said that if there's going to be a hack, if there's going to be an attack, it could be on the electronic poll books that are at polling places to establish the identity of folks who are coming in to vote. And so the election officials have said, well, we're going to have paper rolls. We're going to have those traditional lists of people that are registered to vote in that precinct. So if something happens to the electronic poll books, we're going to look up your name. So go and vote. That's what we tell people. Don't let your fears keep you from voting.
In most of the states where there's electronic polling, there's a paper and that paper is
yeah.
preserved.
Yes,
and
right.
so normally I understand the American technology is at such an extent, electoral technology, that they could detect, and which would be very hard to do because you have this offline voting, they could detect an attempt. So that such an attempt, even if they managed to disrupt, would be just more disruptive than succeeding in a disguised sort of Manchurian fashion. And considering that the only rumors of threats have been about people supporting somebody at the national level like Trump, it's hard to imagine that anybody would have a good reason to want to hack because they couldn't be sure of the outcomes on all the other levels.
If you don't trust the current electronic system, you wake up tomorrow and you say, you know, you just don't trust these electronic machines, should you go to the poll and ask for a provisional ballot? Is that the answer?
Well,
I would say that the challenge with a provisional ballot is that your vote isn't counted right away. Then your eligibility has to be determined, and then your vote will be counted. I don't think there's any fear of asking for a regular ballot. You mentioned situations where they still have electronic machines where you vote, you press for one candidate and another candidate comes up. That's usually a miscalibration in the machine. You point that out to the poll worker and have them fix that. But no one should be afraid that their vote doesn't count. And we always say a provisional ballot is a last resort, because that ballot is not counted right away.
You mentioned something earlier in this conversation, and I wanted to get a little more detail about it. You said most states have provisions where they can challenge someone to vote or challenge someone's eligibility to vote. Talk to me about that. How does that work? Again, that's something else I'm not really familiar with.
So it varies by state. So, for example, states like Ohio, you have to do it before Election Day. You can't challenge on Election Day. And you have to show that you have some proof, some basis for the challenge. I can't just walk up to you in line and say, you know, you don't look like you should be able to vote. I'm going to challenge your right to vote. In states like Florida, for example, you can do election day challenges. And again, you have to have some basis for the challenge. But what happens is the poll worker is sort of the judge of whether the challenge is successful or not. Now, I should say that in some states, using Florida as an example again, if you're challenged at the polling place, you then have to vote a provisional ballot, no matter what the poll worker determines, because they just want to be sure that you are eligible to vote. So each state has its own rules. But the main point is you cannot challenge someone solely based on their race or language ability. And so you can't discriminate in the challenges. And in most states, you have to have a basis for the challenge. You can't just decide someone looks like they shouldn't be able to vote and challenge them on that basis.
I've got about a minute left. Dr. Moore's final words, your thoughts about tomorrow and really what, you know, what this means going forward. I only have a minute, Doc. But
in some ways, the harshness of this campaign and the absence of substantive issues discussion has in the final moments brought an awareness of the dangers of not paying attention to basic rights. And even the challenges have made, I've seen like our young people going to Cleveland and to North Carolina in political science and else to monitor is a sense that they have to protect the process. Not so much that it's destroyed, but they have to protect it, and that's good. And I think this election will not go by without people noticing the harshness in the absence of substantive ideological discussion. There will be reckoning from FBI to journalists and everywhere else to get the ideological position of the party straightened out and hopefully to preserve the parties or to make them change in a meaningful way. Right now, we've seen both the party structure and the candidates suffer from a lack of substantive commitment to the things that parties used to be to which they used to be committed.
And certainly, I would even go so far as to say for some of us, this is civics in action, which there obviously needs to be more civics education, learning how things work so that no matter who you vote for, you can't think that the system is rigged for or against anyone. I want to thank Marsha Johnson Blanco, Dr. Lorenzo Morris, and Edward Hales. Thank you all for sharing with us. Good luck tomorrow as you either go to the polls or go to the polls to get your work done. And gosh, tomorrow's going to be exciting. And don't forget, of course, the entire WHUR news team will have complete coverage starting tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock until midnight or until it's all done. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, November 7th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, on Twitter at H Fisher WHUR, or at Daily Drum WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton.